for the concept of this workshop, I'm going to be using love as that combination of self-esteem, sense of belonging, self-worth that you are getting from the characters or, you know, people around you. To that point, this is going to be something that you could apply to or all relationships your characters might be having, friendship, family, coworkers. I'm just all going to use the word around love. We're going to walk through the idea of love languages, which I know sounds a little weird, but was developed by Gary Chapman, who is actually a marriage counselor. It's, again, a little weird, but I was only introduced to the concept of love languages from other authors who felt that this was a really good idea to get a very simple grasp of how people work when they are in relationships with each other. So what we are going to do today is we're going to take his concept of love languages and turn it into a character template. Something that comes up across a lot in writing is you've got the writing mechanics aspects of it. So in this case, it's really characters. Good characters have good stories. They're what draw readers into them. And so we're going to use, again, love languages as that idea template to build the characters to have a really nice novel that's going to have characters that are consistent in it, both in internally, the characters have similar characteristics throughout the entire 50,000 words, and also externally in the consistency of how they are interacting with the people around them. The goal is to build characters that actually function like real people, to lessen down on the editing time for the editor, and to have more rich, realistic stories for the reader. For those of you who aren't familiar with what the five love languages are, it's word of affirmation, quality time, receiving gifts, acts of service, and physical touch. So go ahead, let me know in the chat which one you think is your love language.
Can you show that again, the list?
Yep. Actually see the chat, sadly. All right, cool. The idea was that I wanted to see what you guys said, but I can't see what you said, so I guess we'll just move forward. But now I want you to actually take the test. So you have an idea of what your love language would be. Let's actually find it out. So go ahead to this website here. So it's http://fivelovelanguages.com/quizzes/singles.quiz and answer the questions. And then once you take the test, please go to menti.com, insert this code number, and then we'll be able to see a live representation of what everyone is. So let me go ahead and stop presenting if I can. Yep. And then I'll share this with you in the Zoom chat.
We do that right now?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I'm driving, so I'm pulled over to talk. Oh.
Well, in that case, you can't do it.
I'm driving too. I'll do it when I get home in 10 minutes.
Okay. So then you'll be able to be home and see all the examples lately, because I really don't want you watching YouTube videos while you're driving. So you can skip this active part then. So go ahead and take the single quiz, and then when you're done, go to Menti and enter this code to answer the questions. Again, I will share that in the chat. So it looks like some people are finishing the quiz and have moved on to inputting their results into Menti. It's a tie, neck and neck. Which love language is most represented in the group? Acts of service or quality time? I'm hoping at least someone says receiving gifts, just so, you know, data. All right, we had two drivers, correct?
Yeah, I'm one, Jennifer.
Okay.
Yeah, me, Karen, second one.
Okay, then we are at our, then everyone who's not driving has responded. Cool.
That last category should be physical touch, right?
Right. Sorry, that is definitely a typo. should be physical touch. Okay, so I'm actually sad. Like, no one in our group has receiving gifts as a love language. And I'm only sad because it's such, like, zeros. I don't like zeros. But most of our group is quality time. And then it also looks like move forward presentation. Most of us had a good understanding of what our language was before we took this test. So that's good. We all know each other, that's, or ourselves, and that's a very good thing to know. So let's get out of this and move back to Google Slides. All right, confirming you can all see the presentation still. Perfect, thank you for the head nods. So we're also gonna, we're gonna now break into groups, and I want each of you to kind of come up with your own definition of what those love language are based off of the quiz we took and your own understanding of it. So Sam, can you break us randomly into, actually, do we have enough people for five groups? I don't think we do. No. Okay, Sam, can you break us randomly into groups of, into two groups? So group one, come up with definitions for word of affirmation and quality time. Group two, come up for definitions of acts of service and physical touch. We'll skip receiving gifts because no one here can speak to that since we don't have that represented in our group. So you'll have roughly 5 minutes. See if you can come up with a definition for your two groups, and then also examples of how that love language can be communicated between different types of relationships, be it parental, professional, familiar, and so on. So, all right, go ahead, Sam, and split us up.
All right. I will open the room. So we're just doing this randomly, right?
Correct.
All right. It's better that way. Hopefully this works. Here we go. Off into opening up the rooms. Does anybody see anything, or do I have to broadcast a message? Oh, there we go.
I didn't move.
Neither did I. I think we're a group, though. Every other people moved.
Okay. like somebody, like we lost half the group because I probably did just go into a group. Are we group one or group two? I can't remember.
That is a good question. We are. This doesn't make any sense, honestly.
I'm in your group too. This is Jennifer driving.
Okay, yeah, but it's only the three of us, and there should be more.
I think we should be joining the group. So you should,
right.
See, you may have to stop sharing so you can see that you can join the group.
Oh, yeah, there we go. That's the way to do it. Okay, so I'm going to go to...
I'm not in a group. So I will.
Okay, so I'm gonna come in a second. I'm going to switch to my computer because I'm just pulling in my...
You should be in group two.
Okay. Talk to you later.
You'll be in group, and Jenny, you'll be in group one.
Okay, wonderful. Thanks, Sam.
Okay, I'll talk to you soon.
And Tim wants to know which, he's already gone.
I'll be right back in there. I'm going to hang up from here, though. All right, bye.
Are you back? Checking Jennifer if you were able to join back in yet.
Hi. Quick tech check. Am I still presenting, or do I need to redo that?
I think you need to redo.
You probably need to redo it.
By the way, I am recording this. Just so.
Oh goodness gracious, Sam. Okay. Fine, be that way, ruin my day. No, it's okay. And then I thought I have lost. Oh, no, there's the chat. Ha ha. Okay. I have you now. Okay. So it sounds like there's a little bit of an overlap of who was doing what. But does anyone want to sum up what the group came up with for one of the love languages you talked about?
Sure, I can do that.
Go for it.
So we picked quality time, and we loosely defined it as choosing exclusively you over every other person to spend time with. And some of the examples that we came up with were sitting and having a deep conversation with each other, choosing a group or being invited to go see a movie. The idea is that, you know, you're being selected out of everybody else. Going to have like dinner or lunch with somebody without distractions, hanging out just like on a balcony or going on a trip together. Another one that came up with was reading together, like a parent reading a book to a child.
Oh, great. All good ones. Anyone from the other group want to speak? That wasn't me. Don't laugh at me, Jen. No? All right. I won't force
anyone. We had a note taker.
We did not have a note taker, or at least if there was, I wasn't paying attention.
Of course, I was taking notes.
Of course, but, taking notes.
Yeah. So words of affirmation, verbal appreciation from others of things that are important to you, of being interested in you, showing interest in what's going on in your life and what's important to you, bolstering up, supporting you through a tough time. Saying things like "I love you" to your significant other, recognition, you know, so you can see what others are doing, or on the receiving end being recognized as seen as being important. And if you're going through a tough time, then acknowledgement of you know, the situation that you're in.
Yep. Cool. Wonderful. So thank you all. And what we're going to do now is we're actually going to go into the definition of these love languages as defined by Chapman. Know that some of what we talked about in groups will match, some of it won't match. But that's kind of the understanding of this, is the love languages really are about how positive emotion is conveyed. If it's differently for you than the standard way, then that's the way it's going to be. And that's the way it might be for your characters as well. So let's just jump right into this. So the words of affirmation, you feel loved when you're complimented, praised, encouraged, and are verbally acknowledged. So examples would be like, you're an incredible artist. Thank you for doing that for me. I appreciate it. And of course, I love you. Quality time is you feel loved when you get to spend time with someone. What you do doesn't really matter, but it has to be focused attention, kind of like what Sarah was describing. So it could be things like taking a walk, taking a class together, going on vacation. Occasionally quality time is filled with conversation, but there's a distinction between that and what's happening with words of affirmation. Words of affirmation is you're being told that you are loved because you're hearing that verbal confirmation of it. Quality time is knowing that someone is hearing you, and it's that sharing of emotions or ideas with the person that you're spending time with, be it, you know, your kid, your friend, or your lover. So receiving gifts, you feel loved when you're receiving a gift with thought behind it. There does have to be meaning to the gift. So it could be anything from flowers to a homemade macaroni frame. Acts of service, you feel loved when someone does a task for you, be it asked or unasked. But there's usually a hierarchy of tasks. So some things are going to be more important to you than other. So having someone cook you dinner might make you feel more loved than having someone make your bed, for example. And some of these services could be very physical. Sometimes they're not teaching you something, clearing the way for you. I know I always feel like appreciated from my manager when they clear my schedule of meetings so then I could have focused work time. So it's a varied thing. Physical touch. So because again, this is kind of based off of that concept of relationships within couples, it's very heavy about, you know, that aspect of relationships. But touching can also be outside of the bedroom. So it's holding hands, it's cuddling, sometimes it's just leaning against someone. And it's also worth noting that physical touch is also very dependent on the culture that you were raised in. So here in America, if you're meeting strangers, you're probably not going to touch them. You're just going to wave and say hi. In Europe, you might get a kiss cheek. So in that case, how this love language is expressed is very varied. Okay. Any questions about the love languages before we kind of dive into using them for the sake of writing and relationship building?
So on the cultural thing, for instance, if you had someone who is not aware of the cultural difference, then you could get that misinterpretation. You know, they might feel, oh, wow, that person really loves me. They kissed my cheek.
Yes. And we'll get into that a little bit too, but that tends to be, it also being a difference of what is important to what person. So if physical touch is really important for someone and then they get a kiss cheek from someone from Spain, it's going to mean a whole lot to them. But if that person from Spain is just like, this is regular day thing, or my love language is actually gifts, then they're just going to be like, meh, whatever. And then you'll have all that delicious romantic tension from the one side. But that's how that works. All right, anything else here? All right, I now warn you, we are coming to the portion of this presentation where there will be a lot of YouTube videos. So the point is to show examples, and we'll go through that as we go along. Okay, so to back up just a little bit, we are, again, using the idea of love languages to build character. So we're using them as a template. Determining what love language your character uses is going to help you guide their actions through your novel. If a character's love language is receiving gifts, then we're going to see them constantly doing that with their friends, with their family. If it's physical touch, they're going to be the person who's going to be reaching out and giving hugs and backpacks versus someone who's not. In real life, this can be a little varied. We all took the quiz and we had our one primary love language. Sometimes people might have a different love language for what they're giving versus what than when they're receiving. But for the sake of writing novels and writing characters, just pick one. It'll be simpler for you, and it gives you that straightforward template that you could use moving forward while you're writing. So, for those of you who have things figured out already for your nano novel, any idea what your main character's love language is?
Do you have that list again?
Yes. It's so far back, but here you go. So again, the five love languages are words of affirmation, quality time, receiving gifts, acts of service, and physical touch. What is your main character's love language?
Sorry, I never thought about it.
It's okay. I don't expect everyone to think about that.
This one's kind
of... Yeah.
My character in the beginning is kind of a loner. Mm-hmm. And so now that you made me think of it, I'm thinking it'd be cool for love languages being with people. So she's kind of love starved in a way.
Yes. And that can be a big thing for a character growth, actually, is having them be in that position of being unloved. And then through the process of the novel, either learn how to communicate or have other people learn how to communicate to them that they're loved. That's a great idea for a character arc.
Does it also depend how your character is brought up? You know,
typically no. What will make a difference is in how they're between like their age, how they're raised, their culture. There'll be like dialects, as Chapman calls, of the different love languages, but the underlying language will be the same. So the types of gifts, for example, that you want to receive when you're 5 is going to be very different than the types of gifts you want to receive when you're 18 versus 45. But you're always going to want a gift that's going to be the most meaningful for you.
And your love language doesn't change as you grow?
Correct. Yes. How the particulars of it might morph, but your primary language itself will stay stable throughout your life. So, and weirdly enough, he's actually like written parenting books about this. So it's like from a parent's perspective, how to interact with a kid, how to interact with your teen. He's actually also used this as a professional like teaching tool. This is something that kind of weirdly crosses a lot of avenues here. So giving gifts, that's another good idea for a character. It really shows too, and it might be something on their mind. So a character who's like giving gifts all the time, like, okay, we're going to walk by a store, like, oh, that item is making me think about so-and-so. I wonder if so-and-so would like this. They're probably going to give a lot more meaning to that random rock a guy picks up and gives to them than anyone else. So...
Would giving gifts be a subset of receiving gifts?
Yes, it would be the same. So receiving and giving gifts would be whether you're receiving or giving love.
But do you really view it symmetrically that way? I mean, like, the thing that you're looking for in love is how you view love, and so you do it to the other person, or is it that you seek one thing but you might express it a different way?
In real people, sometimes, yeah, it will work out that way. How you are giving love is going to be different than how you want to receive it. For the sake of just having it simple for writing, we're trying to match it for characters.
I'm sorry, Errol, I had over-talked to you. You were going to say something?
No, I'm still trying to figure it out, because my character has a gap in his life at the beginning of my novel, and because he's stuck in a situation not of his own making, and has had to leave behind a lot of what he wants. And then he's very vulnerable to receiving gifts. And because of that, he falls into, he makes wrong choices, because the receiving gifts, the physical gifts, are replacing, I guess, what he would be looking for prior to his being stuck, is words of affirmation more than anything else. He's trying to break out of a situation and excel in the world. And I'm sure that would be the words of affirmation, but that's fallen apart. And he's approached by someone who can give him gifts and some acts of service, but it's more receiving gifts. And because of that, he follows that route instead of the higher route. So that's where my character is. And he eventually overcomes that, but at a very horrible cost by the end of the novel. So,
of course, you need that.
So, can people, let's say, unscrupulous people who are looking for an advantage over people, and they can perceive people's love languages, could use that to, let's say, love bomb a person and use that to manipulate them?
Yes, that's actually what could be considered at the core of gaslighting, for example. Mm-hmm. So if gaslighting is the idea of manipulating the other half of a relationship to get them to see your way, and that's usually done by, you know, making them doubt themselves, taking away their self-esteem, which is, you know, if their love language is words of affirmation and all you do is insult them and then flip it around and give them what they're looking for once in a while to keep trailing them along. It's definitely something that happens. We'll get into that a little bit too, about how knowing someone's love languages can be used to both build them up and destroy them, because we're novelists. That's what we're doing. We don't want to always be nice to our characters.
If I can add to that.
Sure.
A lot of cults also prey upon that too. They find people who are insecure, and they're usually led by somebody who's a charismatic person who knows how to manipulate people using these kinds of techniques. You know, you mentioned the love bombings. You know, if someone's thinking about leaving the compound or whatever, everyone will just go and give this person a hug. And if they're, you know, or something along that line. So it can be, very easily manipulated.
Toxic friendships, I feel like, do a similar type of thing. Where you'll have I feel like it's a pretty common trope that you might see in like a lot of kids fics, kids shows. So you have the really popular girl and like the nerdy girl who follows her around and does all her homework, and it's because the popular girl has that ability to know what this girl wants. She wants maybe gifts, or she wants quality time with someone who like listens to her. And so I will give that to her out of a false sense of friendship so I can get what I want, which is someone doing my homework.
That's a plot of Wicked.
So that type of character dynamics is something you really do see this everywhere and across different types of relationships. So with that in mind, let's go ahead and move forward. Okay, good. These don't auto start. Jen, look at your face. I know. I love this movie too. To kind of like recap what we were discussing, when you're seeing love successfully communicated between two people, you can tell that they have a healthy relationship. Here's an example of that from the third How to Train Your Dragon movie.
Well, you're right. You're back to where you started. But I was the first to believe in you. And I have watched you doubt whether you're worthy ever since. But you know what? I am the person I am today because of you. I never told you that, but it's true. You are the bravest, most stubborn, most determined knucklehead I know. Toothless didn't give you that hiccup. He just made it
easier.
And now it's going to be a lot harder. So, what are you going to do about it?
Probably something stupid.
That's the hiccup, I know.
All right, a thought? What's the love language between these two?
Words of affirmation.
Affirmation.
Yeah, so it's pretty obvious. You can tell that they both are feeding off of the shared communication between the two of them. So this is a situation where similar love languages are being communicated, and it's a positive result. When love languages are not successfully communicated, it's essentially like a giant, giant mess. This is from one of my, this is not one of my favorite movies, but I love the dialogue in here because it just expresses this concept so well. Oh, wait, no. Play. There we go.
We will. Oh, we'll be cleaning the dishes tomorrow.
Here, you know, I don't like waking up to a dirty kitchen.
Who cares?
I care, all right? I care. I busted my ass all day cleaning this house and then cooking that meal, and I worked today. It would be nice if you said thank you and helped me with the dishes.
Fine. I'll help you do the damn dishes.
Oh, come on. You know what? No, that's not what I want.
You just said that you want me to help you do the dishes.
I want you to want to do the dishes.
Why would I want to do dishes? Why?
That's my whole point.
All right. Ideas of what's going on here. Obviously, they've got two different love languages, and so they're not communicating, but what do we think those love languages are?
Looks like she wants words of affirmation and acts of service.
Definitely acts of service, yes. Affirmation, I think, is her secondary language. What about for the guy?
What is the one that they just want to spend time, like just have
quality time. Yeah. Same type of thing. So they're not getting what they want from the other person, and it leads to fights. So this movie is the breakup, in case anyone watched this. It's great. They break up in like the first 15 minutes, but then since they're in a rent controlled apartment in New York, they're like, we got to still figure out how to live with each other. It's a delightful mess. So as a concept, I think we understand this. If you are speaking the correct love language, things are going well. If you're not speaking the correct love language, something needs to change, essentially. So from the standpoint of words of affirmation, this is when you're showing characters verbally support. Jen, you're just like laughing. You're gonna love this entire presentation. it's using words to shore up the people that you care about. You're telling them, I believe in you, and giving them any type of support that they might need.
I have to go off. You'll be okay, Harry. You're a great wizard. You really are. I'm not as good as you. Me, books, cleverness. More important things. Friendship and bravery. And Harry, just be careful.
They're such sweet little children. Here we have Hermione not only saying, hey, Harry, this is something you're good at, but then she's going to continue to build up his confidence before he goes off to face a battle, because she cares about him. And this is how she shows it, is through words of affirmation. And Harry responds to it really well. This is in contrast to elsewhere in the series. We're seeing him interact with Snape, and words are used to the opposite effect.
You were seen by no less than 7 muggles. Do you have any idea how serious this is? You have risked the exposure of our world. Not to mention the damage you inflicted on a Whomping Willow that's been on these grounds since before you were born.
Honestly, Professor Snape, I think it did more damage to us.
Silence! I assure you, were you in Slytherin and your fate rested with me, the both of you,
would be on the train home tonight. As it is,
they are not.
Professor Dumbledore. Professor McGonagall.
Headmaster. These boys have flouted the decree for the restriction of underage wizardry. As such,
I am well aware of our bylaws, Severus, having written quite a few of them myself. However, as head of Gryffindor House, it is for Professor McGonagall to determine the appropriate action.
We'll go and get our stuff then. But I must impress on both of you the seriousness of what you have done. I will be writing to your families tonight, and you will both receive detention.
All right, so it's kind of a long clip because there's a lot here that I wanted to talk about. One is we know that Harry and Ron are responding really strongly to words. They believe that Stripes' tirade means that they're going to get expelled. This is proof that they take anything that their teachers are saying to heart. But this also shows a good contrast between Snape chastising them and then Dumbledore and McGonagall, the more authoritative figures of the school based off of their position in the hierarchy. They choose to not use as negative words. So this is also something where we see Snape is purposely using negative words to tear apart little children. I have issues with Snape for many reasons, this is being one of them. But it is a good example of where someone is knows what someone is looking for and then purposely denies it in order to get their own personal expression apart. So kind of like what you were talking about before, Tim, like where you can take the concepts of love language and twist it. Snape is doing that here to Harry and Ron. All right, so.
Isn't it possible though to interpret that as the good cop, bad cop routine? And so maybe the teachers actually, you know, they want to impress the seriousness of this. And so they set Snape up as the villain and, but they don't, the actual consequences are not, you know, horrible, but those kids will never forget this moment.
Exactly. And that's the point. This is from the point of view of specifically Harry in these two examples. In the first one, we see him getting words that really elevate him. And in the second one, we're seeing him getting words that are really, you know, powerful enough where he's debating his entire, like, education from here forward. So a lot of this is going to be from the point of view of your character, regardless of what's going on in other people's minds and your plot. We're talking about how this is going to affect them. In this case, very negative. And it is also a character point for Snape to know that even if he might be playing the bad cop, this is not the way that he needs to do it. And he also perhaps likes being the bad cop. It's also a good character thing that you could toss in here.
I mean, so. I guess like the one thing that I would also see from it is, you know, he's being negative to them and that's not great, obviously. And he knows that he's upsetting them, but there's also some not seriousness to them. Like, they don't care as much about upsetting him as the disappointment from Dumbledore and McGonagall, who they have greater respect for. Mm-hmm. So even if their words are less harsh, it is more meaningful that they are disappointed in their actions.
Yep, that's small. Yeah, that's another good point. All right, anything else? Otherwise, we'll move on. And sorry, this looks like it went weird. But nope, okay. So quality time. So I have a text example for this one. That's because quality time is relatively hard to show in films. It's typically boring to read. It's typically boring to watch. You like skip through it. This is where you have the montages of stuff. You know, like that first, you know, like 10 minutes of Up is really just like a giant montage of quality time. But when you're talking about how we're showing the relationships between characters, the good way to display this is actually when they're talking about character time or quality time. So in this case, this is an example from the flat share. I would apologize for the really weird formatting, except this is actually how the book is written in this character colon dialogue type of thing. So to read this out loud for people who might be on their phones, Holly, have you come to say goodbye? Me, I've come to check your bloods. Holly, for one last time. Me, depends what they say. Holly, you're being grumpy. You don't want me to leave. Me, of course I do. I want you to be well. Holly, no you don't. You don't like stuff changing. You want me to stay here. I'll miss you too. Will you visit me at home? I glance at her mom, who is wearing a tired but very happy smile. Me, you'll be too busy at school and all of your after-school clubs. You won't want visitors. Holly, yes, I will. Holly's mom, I'd love to have you around for dinner, really. And Holly would too. Me, well, maybe, thanks. Holly's mom is welling up. I never cope well in these situations. Start to feel slightly panicked. So what's going on here is we're talking about quality time. We're talking about me, who his name is Leon, going to Holly's house, who is actually his patient in a children's ward at a hospital, to spend quality time with him. Quality time is obviously important for Holly. She is making this invitation, come see me, come see me, come see me. And we could tell that Leon is having difficulties with this. He doesn't want to do this. Quality time is not his first love language. But because he cares for Holly, he is taking the steps to be like, okay, I will do something for you because I care about you. And later in the book, he actually does go to her birthday dinner. So this is a situation where having those love language communications might not always be easy, but if characters really care about each other, you should show them working towards it, either towards the middle of your novel or at the end if it's like, yay, we're in a relationship now. So on the flip side, we kind of know, again, this is not Leon's primary love language. And here is that relationship in a conversation with his girlfriend in the novel. So me, I can't figure out what you want from me. K, I want you back. Me, what? K, I want you back, Leon, present in your life with me. It's like you've stopped seeing me. You drive in and out and spend your spare time here, but you're not really with me. All you do is work and write to your brother and fixate on things, whether it's your patients or the latest detail in your brother's appeal. You used to do stuff, go out, spend time with me. Me, I've never had much spare time, Kay. What I have had has always been for you. Kay, you go to see him every other weekend these days. I can't be mad at you for that. I know that, but what I mean is you have so little time and now I feel like I get an even smaller fraction of it. In fact, two pages later, these characters are now broken up. This is what drives a relationship apart. Leon is willing to make that commitment towards a patient spending quality time, but he can't handle it in a romantic relationship. He can't give that level that Kay is looking for. Obviously, this is probably a familiar dialogue because this happens a lot in romance novels. But this is also something that can happen between friendships, between perhaps more professional relationships, like again, Leon and Holly is that weird mix of professional and personal. But that is quality time. Sorry, no videos for this one, but the rest of them are all videos. Questions on this one? Otherwise, we'll go on. Cool. Gift giving. So we didn't really talk about, we've touched on this in a little bit. So gifts can be used to identify or deepen the relationship. And for the sake of stories, it's kind of nice because then they could be a symbol that you nod back to later. So this is from the first Iron Man, in case you don't recognize. Now, this clip is really more about Pepper. Pepper is the one who's giving the gift to Tony. Tony typically doesn't really deal with gifts throughout the franchise. So this is Pepper saying, hey, boss, and maybe future romantic partner, I care about you. And here is this roughly homemade gift, a customized thing that she's giving as a sign of, you know, her affections. So this is a positive step in their relationship, even though it's not Tony's primary love language. It's helping Pepper by saying, hey, I was thinking of you. And he is partially receiving that, even though it's not his primary love language. Eventually in the franchise, they become a couple, like surprise, surprise. And Tony has learned that gift giving is actually, you just laugh all the time. I love it. So Tony has learned that gift giving is Pepper's love language. He has made progress in that aspect of it. However, there are still some things going wrong.
Did you bring me strawberries? Did you know that there's only one thing on earth that I'm allergic to?
To strawberries. This is progress, Pepper. I knew there was a correlation between you and this.
I need you.
I need you too. That's what I'm trying to say.
So even if you know the right love language, things might still not be good for the characters. In this case, it's a little too late. According to the theory of love languages, the more love you have, the happier you are with the relationship, and the less love you're getting, the more unhappy you are with the relationship. At this point, Pepper is completely done with the two of them, so Tony has to make some really big strides to make it work. And gifting a food that she's allergic to is just not going to cut it on so many levels. So, this seems also laughing. I'm glad that this is amusing to you all. So that's that. Acts of service. So acts of service, again, is when you're doing something for someone, for your love.
Primrose Everdeen. Mm-hmm. Where are you, dear? Come on up. Well, come on up.
Here.
We need to get out of here.
No.
Go find mom.
No.
I'm so sorry.
No. All right. So, I see this scene as strong proof that this is Katniss's love language, acts of service. Like, you could also read this as like just trying to save someone that she loves, in case, instead of just specifically showcasing acts of service. But the situation that's going on here is every year one girl child and one male child is selected for the Hunger Games, where they're all like, it's a battle. Like, 24 kids come out, one kid comes out. This is the 74th year of it. And you can assume that this type of situation has happened before. One sibling has been selected, but in that entire 74 years, no one else has volunteered to save a family member. Katniss is the first, because this is her love language, is that acts of service. In this case, for her younger sister.
And you see her do it throughout the series, even at the beginning, when she's out spending time hunting for her family. And there's other acts that she does that showcase it.
Oh, for sure. This is, it's kind of delightful, because I think the entire, the two main characters, Katniss and Peeta, I think both actually have acts of service as their main love language. But as we'll see in the next clip, it doesn't always click for them.
you say you have a crush on me? You say you want to train alone? Is that how you want to play?
Stop! Stop it!
Let's start right now!
Hey. Did you think?
He made me look weak.
He made you look desirable, which in your case can't hurt, sweetheart. Right, Dennis. Of course I'm right. I can sell the star-crossed lovers from District 12.
We are not star-crossed lovers.
It's a television show. And being in love, that boy might just get you sponsors, which could save your damn life.
So what's going on here is PETA publicly made the declaration that I've been in love with Katniss forever for the sake of this narrative they're spinning for the reality show they've unwittingly found themselves in. From PETA's perspective, it is an act of service. I am doing this to help Katniss, you know, get a benefit in the arena. Because they don't have a good relationship, though, Katniss is not prepared to see this as an act of service. It's not something that she's open to receiving any type of love from PETA about because they just haven't gotten along. So she is misinterpreting this as him being malicious and really getting her angry. The only reason she changes her mind about it is because someone has to step in and point it out to her. She's not in the capacity to accept love from PETA, and so misses it until someone says, hey, this is actually because he cares. So having these love languages, even if people speak the same language, they might not be on the same page. So one last love language here. Physical touch. So again, in a lot of times with couples, it will be kisses, bedroom activities, and the like, but it's also something that can be used in other situations. So in terms of this one.
When I saw you, I couldn't believe it.
So it was actually really hard for me to find like examples of this for both sides of the equation. So in this scene, the characters are siblings. So Arthur is giving his sister Morgana a hug to comfort her as she's trying to get over the fact that she's just recently being kidnapped. This is a display of love that we don't see a lot in the show. We kind of have ideas from other places that this is something that Arthur would like, but he isn't always getting. In this case, he is willingly offering it to his family members. From the flip side, however, and that's kind of why I like this scene, is the kidnapping that Morgana is recovering from was actually fake. So in this case, she is presenting herself as weak, asking Arthur to comfort her in the expression of love to gain his trust so she can then continue to, like, dismantle the kingdom from inside. So this is a situation where physical touch is being used as a love language for both positive and negative connotations. And then here's another negative example from the show.
Look, I row with my father all the time. You should do what I do. Just lie low and wait till he comes to his senses. It'll soon blow over.
No, I don't think so, Summer.
Oh, cheer up, will you?
I was punching me in the arm to cheer me up.
It works with the knights.
Well, they're thick, aren't they?
I'm the knight.
There you go, then.
Right, so, as I said before, it's obvious that physical touch is Arthur's, you know, love language. It's not Merlin's. But what I did also wanted to talk about this is a lot of times in physical touch is used, the negative aspects of it are connected with violence, with assault, harassment, and it's really meant to position as a character as a bad person. But it doesn't have to be that way. In this way, we're seeing that disconnect over physical touch being not like romantic tension, not showing a character being bad, but just actually a comedic misunderstanding between friends. That's very rare, but it is something that can be done. So, any questions about any of these examples before we kind of steamroll into the end? This took way less time than I anticipated. No? Okay, cool. So putting things together, if you know your character's love language, then you know how they act. And that also means you know how they want others to act in order to give them love. And then you also know if they don't get that, that's what hurts them. So from an author perspective, this is all stuff that you can work with. If you know that your character really wants to have that quality time with someone, give it to them to show a good aspect of the story and remove it to show a negative aspect of that story, depending on whether you want that other character they're interacting with to be their support system, to be their rival, to maybe have it be the character arc between the two of them, having them come together. Then you have to start with them hurting each other and then have them finish by, you know, speaking each other's languages. The concept here is, if you know your character, you know what's good for them and you know what's bad for them. And you have to use it as an author. And a lot of times the love language is really just how they're communicating with everyone else. They're communicating strongly, they'll be happy. If they're communicating poorly, they're going to be miserable. Some characters are going to want to fix that. Some characters want to make other characters miserable. It all depends on your story. But I did kind of want to reiterate, like, this concept is not just unique to love languages. Love languages is one communication theory that a lot of people tend to speak to. They find it makes sense in their life. They see it applicable to, you know, across all relationships. But it is really just a character building template. And I know that this has kind of been talked about before, like Myers-Briggs and DISC personalities. When you're attributing a character to a section of one of these templates and these personality types, it also comes with an understanding of this is what the character is looking for. This is what they have a hard time with. So just like a character whose love language is words of affirmation, they're going to want to hang out with someone who says, I love you all the time. And they don't want to hang out with someone who tears apart their self-esteem. Someone who is an introvert is not always going to hang around with the extrovert all the time. And instead they're going to want to hang around with people who have a similar idea of what a Friday night should be. DISC is very similar. Horoscope zodiac kind of have that same elements. Like if you go to a horoscope site, you're like, okay, I'm a Cancer. What's the compatibility with a Gemini? What's the compatibility with the Scorpio? You will actually find those type of templates if you want to build whether or not characters should interact well or not. There's also standard personality tropes and boxes, I would say, that are associated with each sign of the horoscope and each sign of the zodiac. Very easy to find. Just Google away. But again, knowing how your character communicates with people, whether it's through how they're expressing love, how they're expressing other aspects of their personality, just use that to help you build a character or bring consistency throughout your novel. It'll help you figure out how other characters should interact with them, and you can go from there. I will say, don't switch templates. If you're using love languages as a template, don't build all your other characters using the Myers-Briggs personality. They're different systems. They're not always going to mesh. But you could definitely probably have someone whose love language is gifts, and then also have them be like a tiger from the zodiac to build up how fiery they might want to be. So that's that. Any questions from the group?
Yeah. So Jenny, it seems to me, you know, like this love language, it provides motivation for the characters, but it's maybe just one dimension of the motivation. You know, the dimension of love in terms of what they want and what they need in their lives, but it's not the sum total. You know, it's like you could go to a different axis and see character motivation.
It's the internal aspects of it. And so love languages are less about what the character wants and more about communication and how they interact with other people. if you're like to go back to the Hunger Games, like the plot of the Hunger Games is not for her to get love from PETA. You know, the plot of the Hunger Games is I need to survive this child death match. But her internal journey that you could argue, especially through the first two books, is coming to grasps that she actually has feelings for PETA and how, and they end up in an actual relationship, not just something that they're presenting for the media. The love languages in this case is really just the mechanics of how that plot is happening. If they weren't speaking the same love language, then they wouldn't have developed a relationship. But having that relationship develop is going to be independent based off of their communication styles, because that's the plot and the structure of your novel. This is really just, what does your character need in order to essentially be happy, as you were saying, versus something that they are seeking from the sake of a plot. However, if you're writing a romance, then what they are internally seeking in terms of love is going to be very linked to the plot of your story. Sometimes in a lot of literary novels, you could argue the same. If the focus of the relationship of the book is the relationship between like a child and her parent, or if you're writing a book where the core of it is actually really about a friendship, then this and how the communication between the two characters is, since that's going to be part of your plot, you really should be thinking about the communication styles in that case. But this is not a plot builder. This is a character builder.
Okay. But even as a character builder, like the character history, how they were brought up, the kinds of themes that they experienced, you know, like, did they have emotionally abusive parents? Were there traumatic incidents in their history that marked them, so that it kind of made them yearn for something, you know? So like maybe a character grew up where the father wasn't present, and so he or she is always looking for some kind of affirmation from a father figure, and there's like this hole in their life. But that's not necessarily like their love language. You know, as you said, it's more the style, or, you know, the kind of thing that proves something, but their history might be more something that drives their, I don't know, the hole in their heart that they want to fill.
I mean, yeah, you're always going to have that like external desire and the internal desires. So like in the situation you just said, the external desire could be, I want to find my father and I want to have a relationship with him. But that doesn't mean that when they were a child that they had an unhappy childhood. It could be one of those situations where like they just, their love language is words of affirmation, and they always got it from their mom. So they have no problems with that. And so they might want a relationship from their dad, but they don't need it to feel whole. Or it could be a situation where their love language is words of affirmation and they never got it from their mom. So they're hoping that they could get it from someplace else to feel better. In this case, a father figure, which means, you know, you're going to road trip and find the father. And then that father maybe doesn't actually speak words of affirmation. Like, it could be something else. But in that case, it's kind of the same situation. Like, you have a child who's still looking for something from their father. But it doesn't have to be related to filling, you know, the sense of love that they're feeling. It could just be something else. Again, this is a template for how your characters are going to interact with people, not so much how you want your novel to go. Though in writing your plots, you really have to determine, okay, what does my character want? Because if they don't work together, a character path and your plot path, then the novel's just not going to feel as cohesive.
Okay.
All right. Anything else, y'all? If not, then I think we're done 30 minutes early. So look at that. If we don't have any questions about the presentation, do we have any questions about Nano as we move forward into October and soon to hit November? So since you have all three of your MLs here right now. Also no. All right, Tim and Sam, we are just rocking it this year.
How is everyone doing getting ready for Nana?
I have done zero planning.
Yeah, definitely not enough planning on my side either.
I mean, I'm a hardcore pantser.
I love that Karen's on fire though. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, honestly, like, I finished this presentation an hour before I walked through it. So I'm a true pantser, y'all. I do it in everything.
And that was an excellent presentation, I have to say. I can't believe you did it. So
I have been working on it for a while. I just only finished it an hour before we started. So I'm glad that you found it helpful.
Actually, I have a question.
Sure.
But aside from quizzes, how can you discover people's love languages? Are there ways to, I don't know.
Well, how did you analyze yourself before you took the quiz?
Yeah, but there are no walls inside me. Right. I can go through the different scenarios and just kind of measure it internally, like the questions that you get in the quiz, you know, which means more, A or B?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
is this clear or is this clear?
You know? But it's the same type of concept. And so the quiz is giving you like concrete scenarios, but if you just like look back through your life and your own experiences and your relationships, what has made you happy, that will definitely give you a clue. The other thing that it's recommended is actually look at what makes you upset. Like if you find that someone is constantly like bad mouthing you, giving you bad reviews, doing this, and you find that that's really hurtful, well, then you can guess on the flip side that this is hurting me because this is my primary love language. I am hurt because so-and-so doesn't have time to hang out with me. Well, oh, maybe that's because quality time is really what I'm looking for here. That's another way to go around it. You could also just do like, I don't want to say the Occam razor's way, but like the slashing. You're like, okay, this is something that's definitely not me. This is something that's definitely, you know, not.
Yeah, but that those are internal things. I'm looking more like if you have a character who is using other people's love languages to manipulate them.
Okay, sorry.
A lot of it could just be trial and error. From what I understand, most people are, if you just meet somebody and they do something that's a little off color, like you don't automatically write them off. You just say, oh, that person's a little strange. But if somebody else, if this other person is really in tune to the first person's response, they can say, you know, that other person can say, okay, they didn't like it when I hugged them. So maybe I'll try giving them a gift next time. And especially if the person's really manipulative, they just keep trying until they hit that one person really likes. And then once they get that warm response from, you know, maybe it's the, you know, the gifts, the tickets to the theater, then they just keep piling that on because they've, you know, just trial and error figured out which one it is.
But, and so what she's essentially saying too is you have one character that's reading the cues, the physical reactions,
yes,
of the other person. So you're kind of almost looking at like the psychological aspect of it and the external reactions of a person, and so you could have a character that's really good at reading those, that you know, knows maybe more about psychology and stuff, or you know,
or they're just good at picking up social cues. There are, yeah, you know, like the opposite of a Asperger's person.
Yeah,
I don't think there's a word for it, but
well, so you have like you know psychology. There's profiling and stuff. If you're looking at it like from a more clinical point of view, from, you know, like cops and stuff, but you know, yeah, there's people that are just very good at the social emotional responses.
For sure. Go ahead, Jennifer.
If you're looking at just like at the outward side, what do they do that like meets that criteria? If you're not having a character that's manipulative, you just want to make your character, what kind of love language does this character have? Is what kind of love language what kind of, how does that person exhibit? Like, go to the slide where it shows what that kind of person would exhibit. So like acts of service, I actually heard a real example where this one woman didn't realize how much her father loved her because he never said, I was in a group where she talked about it. She goes, see, I never knew he loved me because he never said, I love you, but he was over at her house every weekend fixing things. Mm-hmm. And when she heard that presentation, she was like, oh my gosh, he's an acts of service person. He doesn't even know how to, that's, he's showing his love that way. So you go to whatever thing they have, and those are the outward signs of the inward feelings.
Yeah, but I thought Jenny had said that it can be sometimes asymmetric. So, you know, the father in that case might be expressing his love through acts of service, but that might not be his love language.
If somebody's doing it most of the time, unless they're manipulating, if they're doing it a lot, that would probably be a sign that they're, that wouldn't you say, Jenny, that would be a sign of that tends, yes. Like, I think giving so, them gifts tends to be the kind of person that would
want. Yeah, to in that situation, yes. So what's going on is acts of service is the dad's love language, and the daughter just didn't realize that except in hindsight. So because that's his first instinct is, I'm going to go help my daughter, I'm going to go fix her door. That's his acts of service. But you're right, Tim. Sometimes people are performing a love language because they know that's what someone else is going to respond to. So in this case, if the daughter realizes that, okay, my dad's love is acts of service, then instead of telling him I love him next time I see him, I'm going to bring him a plate of cookies that I made. So you can perform any of these love languages. The idea is just which one is the most meaningful for you is your primary love language. That's the one that you're building most of your interactions around. You can totally perform the other languages for malicious or positive reasons because you know this is what someone else is going to respond to. But to also kind of get into what you were asking before, Tim, about how you might be able to tell someone else's love language, I think it's very easy to knock out, again, kind of like what people talk about, like body reactions and facial expressions to what they don't like. That's a little easier, perhaps, than figuring out what they do like. And then from there, you can kind of work at it. If you can eliminate 3 out of the 5 love languages, well, then if you perform those 2 on a consistent basis to manipulate them, then there you go. But I'm hoping that if you're actually in a relationship, like with anyone, that you talk to them, like, I'm obviously you're bothered by something I'm doing. What is it? Please tell me.
And just kind of an example of what Jenny, you know, mentioned in this whole thing. For one of the NaNoWriMos, I had characters whose love languages didn't match. So the guy would bring the girl presents and the girl would get angry because, like, he would bring her flowers and she would get angry because you could have done something better than with your money than buy flowers for me. Like, you know, you could have, you know, bought groceries, which we could have actually used to make dinner or something like that. So she viewed this gift giving as being irresponsible, whereas he viewed it as an act of love.
Yeah, the love languages don't have to be the same for members of a relationship. A positive relationship is going to have people trying to use the right language to communicate with the other person, but they don't have to have the same. Like in a, like even the example here we saw from the flat share between Leon and Holly. Obviously, Holly wants a quality time. Leon doesn't, but he'll do it for her.
And Tim, one of the things that I found really useful, because it's not maybe so much about the love languages, but I've got characters I'm writing right now that are studying one another, and I use the emotion thesaurus a lot for my characters to kind of pick up on, like, actions. I'm writing a spy thing right now, so like, but they're picking up on the actions of the other, and so, like, I'm using that a lot to kind of figure out what actions would be appropriate for certain emotions.
That's a good suggestion. I just picked that up this summer, so I'll have to take a look at that. Thanks.
So that's a book that you use, the Motion Thesaurus, you got that?
Yes, I ended up getting the Kindle version, which was really useful because I can have it up on my computer and I can just scroll to whatever emotion, and then it has like at the end, like links to like something that would, like, you could escalate from, you know, anxiety to this, and then it links you and then you can go straight to it as opposed to flipping through a physical book. But, and they just recently updated it. So I think that's why I also got the Kindle edition as well. But yeah, so it's great. And so if you've got like a character that's anxious, then it's got like these, like a couple pages of common actions that somebody that's anxious would do, some kind of like action words. And it's kind of just, it's very good for me thinking like what this person would be doing it, you know, like, cause all of a sudden you've got a character that's just constantly like fixing their hair or something when they're anxious. Well, there's going to be other things that person does that you might want to show. And so it's just helpful to kind of jumpstart some ideas for those actions for those people, because sometimes we just get stuck in a loop.
And it's definitely very useful from a show, don't tell type of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like that it tells you, like, you know, like it could escalate to these things and then it could de-escalate to these other things. They have like that author, I think, has like a whole series of different things. There's Jenny, do you remember the other ones that author has? Because that author was the one that did that workshop near the beginning of the pandemic that you had linked to us about on the Facebook group, and I can't remember the other ones. There's like a negative traits thesaurus. Positive traits. I can't remember. They did one career oriented.
Have no idea.
Yeah, Karen mentioned just that, yeah, there is a whole series of them. But the emotion thesaurus is, I think, the best one.
I see now. Angela Ackerman. Yeah, she has a few series of books. So I haven't actually read any of them, but I've always heard good things. So all right. If we don't have anything else, I think that's it for the day. You can get 15 minutes back doing what else you were going to do on a Saturday. Right. I don't know about you, but it's finishing my book club before we meet tomorrow morning. So I gotta read.
Always the answer.
Yeah. Yep. I lead this book club too. And yet here I am, a half read book in my hands.
Well, thank you very much for
thank you.
Doing that.
Yeah, nice. Thank
yeah.
you. And looking forward to Sarah's workshop next Saturday.
Yep, 1:00.
Oh, geez, I'm next week already? Wow.
Yep. You have that ready, Sarah?
You're the last one.
Are you well, I've been working on it. It's not finished yet.
No, I feel ya.
Yeah.
But all right, then I guess we will let everyone go.
All right.
Bye, thank everyone.
Bye, bye. Thank you.
Night, right, everybody.
Thank you, Jenny. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thanks, Sam, too, for setting things up.
Thanks, Jenny. Thanks, Sam. Thank you.